G'day, humans. Welcome to the safe space for dangerous ideas. This episode of Uncomfortable Conversations is the audio of a video live stream from the Zepps Live Around the World Tour, Substack's first ever live streamed global podcast marathon, where I'm crossing 24 time zones in a dozen days and circumnavigating the globe to sit down with some of the world's most interesting people in some new global capital nearly every single day, sometimes multiple times a day, streaming live in full high-def glory, not on smartphones mostly, to millions of subscribers across multiple publications. And you can join in at uncomfortableconversations.substack.com should you wish to do so. Or you can listen to this episode. It's delayed to conform to this podcast's normal twice-weekly schedule, which is fine. But you could have seen it or heard it already on Substack if you want to get ahead of the next one. If you're new to Uncomfortable Conversations, this is a place for wrestling with the world's most consequential and controversial and divisive issues in a non-divisive, mostly non-uncomfortable way with the world's most fascinating minds. We don't try to make guests uncomfortable, but the point is that the topics are subjects that normal people generally feel uncomfortable disagreeing about, honestly, and we try to model how to do that in a courageous and courteous and bullshit-free way. This particular conversation is just a preview. If you're a paid subscriber and you're hearing this message, then you're accidentally on the free feed, which you can fix with one click in the show notes, either via Apple or via Substack, or you can just enjoy this excellent appetizer. A reminder that if you get a paid subscription on Apple Podcasts, then you get the full episodes, but there's no way to feed you the live stream or the video or for you to join the conversation in the live chat on Substack or to get notified when we're live. All that stuff comes with the Substack subscription, which is the same price as the Apple subscription with more benefits. Some people are just committed to staying inside the Apple ecosystem, don't want to download a new app. I get it. If you don't want the bells and whistles, that's totally fine. I will just say, trust me, Substack as a platform is becoming so big, ubiquitous and is growing so fast and has so much more great stuff on it that you will almost certainly get around to signing up sometime soon. So you're probably only postponing the inevitable at this point, and you might as well lodge your vote for sane independent media in the meantime. Enjoy this conversation and thank you, whether you're paid or unpaid, for helping us to make debate healthy again.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Village Underground. And now, please welcome to the stage, Josh Zepps.
This is a thicket of chairs and tables. Thank you so much for being here at the Village Underground. Thanks to the Comedy Cellar for facilitating this, to Substack, broadcasting all over the world this live episode of Zepps Live, Uncomfortable Conversations. We've had a fabulous time in New York, a true all-American welcome yesterday with a roving gunman, which was fabulous. Sorry about that, but I was impressed by how cavalierly everybody took it. We were at a bar and my friend was like, oh, there's a gunman, looking at her phone. And in some countries, that would be cause to stop drinking. But my friends were just like, where? And she goes, 51st Street. And they're like, ah, forget about it. Have a drink. We're on 49. It's a lovely day. If you're watching online and you're not in New York City, it's a beautiful, cool, breezy day in New York. No, it's like 37 degrees Celsius, which in Fahrenheit is... Yeah, that's right. This guy says this is the surface of the sun, basically. Without further ado, let us get underway. This is essentially part of a world tour where we're doing a podcast pretty much every day with some fascinating person and streaming it live on Substack. And if you're not subscribed to Uncomfortable Conversations, you should be, at least to get the backlog of all of the awesome episodes that we've done thus far, including this one you're about to see with the one and only Matt Welch, Noam Dorman, Camille Foster, And watch your step. And we, yeah, so Camille is just...
It's hot outside.
Sex.
Good.
Camille was on the show today. We live streamed.
Josh made me cry.
It's true.
That's actually true.
And it wasn't a bad cry. It was like one of those really heartfelt kind of like, I'm a bro, but I'm also sensitive inside.
But it was ugly. I mean, there was snot and all sorts
great.
Of stuff.
It was great.
The cameras had to get cut.
No, I loved it. So I want to talk about, what is that?
Vodka.
Okay. And you got your margarita with no salt?
Yes.
Does that mean you don't have hair on your chest if you don't get salt with your margarita?
We can find out.
Yeah, just go for it. Do we have stripper music?
Literally, yeah.
I want to talk, Colin Hughes unfortunately got his days wrong, and so he's not going to be with us. And,
is that what
then,
we're calling it now?
And then Moynihan, who's also going to be here, he doesn't know where he is, doesn't know his ass from a teacup, as we say.
He's got his continents wrong.
He's in Europe or something. He's cavorting. I'm sure he's having a great time. But Jesse Single will be with us in a moment for a little segment called Jew in the Hot Seat.
Is there any good goddamn reason why Jesse Single isn't with us right now?
Yeah, because he's a pussy.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Bring him up.
Shut up!
Shoot him, Camille.
Like you should have. I want to talk about comedy and Colbert and satire and South Park, because I've had a sense lately that it's entirely possible that maybe we've been doing the whole anti-Trump thing wrong, and instead of just going directly at Trump in order to try to reclaim America using politics, the best way is just to create cartoons of him having a tiny little penis and mock him. What do you reckon?
I don't think anything works, right? They tried all through 2016 to 2020, mocking him, Colbert tried. I think he's almost indestructible.
Oh, great. Good night, everybody!
I mean,
what's the guy been through? He's been indicted, he's January. I mean, what
that's me.
Now that'll take him down. A joke. That's a nobody trying.
No,
a
but
joke.
There's like a theory which smart people understand better than I do. Matt will understand this one. If only Moynihan would hear it, he'd bring it back to Scandinavia in some way, talk about Sweden. But I'm sure that it's true that, like, in authoritarian places, often the regime will find it more difficult to deal with satirists and artists and musicians and punk rockers than it is to deal with actual, official, formal political opposition.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of it is that you can do things that are more subtle. So in the case of Central Europe in particular, you can... You know, right between the lines in your plays, and have a lot of sort of heavy allegories,
like Trey Parker and Matt Stone do.
It's not really allegorical. He just has a little penis and he's flopping around in the desert. I think like thinking about this in terms of you know, what can we do to stop Trump this time? This is all that's already part of the problem. I mean, mm-hmm. like what I think, if one is really interested in opposing the things that a very powerful person is doing, is that you oppose the things that a powerful person is doing. I'm glad for that episode. I didn't think it's the funniest thing in the world, but just the fact that they did that right when Paramount settled with the White House and right when they got their fuck you money, it was a nice welcome reminder that like we should have the sort of basic civic self-respect to just do a lot of this to anyone who has power. Mm. And that's not necessarily a message for comedians. Fuck knows. They've been doing this now for 10 years very ineffectually. But it's actually a pretty good for the rest of us. Like, you don't have to pretend that this is more serious than it is or worth more of your attention than it actually is. And so seeing a micro penis in the desert maybe is helpful.
You know, Camille, when you were blubbering like a little baby today on the podcast, you were talking about the importance of kind of transcending our differences, our identities. This will shock anyone who knows Camille to hear him talking about how we have to get over identity politics. But you're basically saying that like there's only so far that politics and tribalism can take you, and eventually we have to become one with like the universe or some shit like that. I wasn't listening, but
I was just high.
But
unlike now,
how do you feel about the resistance? Capital R.
Well, interesting to talk about the South Park thing in particular first. I watched the episode today because I'd only seen the clips before, and as I was watching it, what struck me was that it wasn't just going after Trump. It was actually just trying to be funny. He's taking the piss out of the left.
that Cartman is denigrating NPR, which has just had its funding taken away, and he's bemoaning it going away precisely because he doesn't have them to ridicule anymore. That's why he's outraged. And I think that's the power of South Park. It's one of the things that has helped to keep it a legitimate, reliably funny franchise for a very long time. They take no prisoners. Like, everyone is a target, and Trump is also a target in a show like that. I don't know what question you asked me a moment ago, because, as I said, I'm a little inebriated. Someone brought me a gin and tonic, and it only takes one. So.
There you go. Fabulous. Yeah. I mean,
I think what would help take him down, if they can make fun of, is make fun of the people who are just crazy around him, like Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens, this whole conspiratorial MAGA base that believes in aliens and devils living under the sea. And this, I think, is fertile ground to make people stop and wonder. But in the end, the only thing that will take him down is bad results. Like, he did these tariffs. If the prices had all shot up, yeah, that would be the beginning of taking him down. Or if the border didn't come down to almost zero crossings, that would be the end of taking him down. But it'd be very hard to take him down with jokes.
I don't know how you hurt Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson by telling everyone things that they're happy to tell everyone else.
You can't hurt them, but the notion that he somehow covers for these people, that he, to me, that's what would, you know, make him look worse to me. As I said, he has that bad result.
Let's talk about Tucker Carlson and, you know, Megyn Kelly and podcaster stand more broadly. You know, everyone's been saying that, like, the podcast election and, like, podcasts are the new place where people get their information and have inspiring conversations. I'm speaking disparagingly, even as I earn my living from podcasts, on a podcast right now, but nonetheless, it is not unproblematic for there to be a fracturing of the media landscape in such a way that everybody can get all of their information from Candace Owens, and that will suffice, which I know you do.
I just, Noam, like, talks to these people all the time. Everyone here does Life from the Table, right? If you don't, you should. What are you even doing?
Noam has an amazing podcast.
And he's just so patient with all of these nut sandwiches. And has it worked out for you? Like, I mean,
first of all, like everything in life, a lot of this is just to entertain myself. And it's what I feel like doing. I mean, I hate to say it, but I do think that even watching the news in some way, I don't feel like it's taking medicine. It's to entertain myself, and for whatever that means. So I like to talk to these people because they fascinate. Has it worked out? I don't think people were worried that I was going to help them by platforming them. I don't think that's been the case at all. Many of these people rue the day they ever came on my podcast. And so in that sense, I don't think I've been part of the problem.
I think, Josh, pursuant to your actual question, like, we all forget or have taken for granted and don't really appreciate the size of the collapse of the institutional media business. It's collapsed by 80%, like, conservatively, maybe like 90% in a matter of 3 or 4 decades. All the core businesses that are wrapped around journalism are just utter nothing compared to what they used to be. From LA, the LA Times, no joke, used to be 1,000 pages a day. It's 20 now. Like, it's you can't fathom the difference. And so in an atmosphere where that business is finished and where the trust of media is even below trust of people in Congress, it's like the lowest regarded institution in, like, human history at this point, then, yeah, there's going to be a lot of competition for eyeballs. I don't, or any earballs or whatever balls, but, like, I don't think it's worth getting upset about the popularity of Candace Owens, because you can't really do a lot about it, but you can just get in there and try to compete yourself and not bemoan and not, like, just look back at what once was and, like, be trying to revive 1992.
Well, I mean, it might be silly to get upset about something, but still wise to be worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, I find the whole thing makes me a little despondent, in large part because, as Noam was indicating earlier, they have all manner of completely insane beliefs. They also have massive audiences, and there's something that is pretty distressing about that, because it suggests that lots and lots of people are either as crazy as they are or willing to tolerate it as, you know.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of that. Fine. I mean, it's also really stressful to go up against people who are batshit crazy. How do you do it? Like, what is your best for your blood pressure test?
I've wondered about this for a while, and I've talked about it before. You know, when I was a kid, the Weekly World News and the National Enquirer and the Supermarket Checkout.
Yeah.
They had huge circulation, always.
Yeah.
And the stories that they would run were very similar to the stuff that Candace Owens and Tucker. And we didn't,
this is true.
And
yeah.
We knew not to take it seriously, but now it's all blurred. Like Tucker Carlson is the best example. He'll interview Putin and then talk about aliens beneath the sea, right? and it's still not clear to any of us how much people take this stuff seriously, how much of it is just it satisfies that appetite for entertainment like the Weekly World News once did. I'm not clear on that.
I'm not even sure that it matters.
It's less dangerous if it's just people not taking it seriously.
I'm not sure, because I think the collapse of liberal democracy can happen through a lazy cacophony of bullshit just as much as it can through diligent commitment to untruths.
That's a little bit too deep, I think. I didn't even do the edible backstage.
You don't have to believe a bunch of stuff that's batshit crazy for the batshit crazy stuff to still be corrosive to the way that the society functions.
Correct. And I think we've had a lot of corrosion in the last 11 years, 12 years. The populist era writ large in this country, not just Trump, and also in the rest of the world, I think, has been corrosive. You know, like, people used to make fun of, oh, my norms are being violated. And stuff like, yeah, norms were kind of, some of them are kind of important.
Yeah.
Like the, you know, we were just listening to the radio driving down. I was talking about this with Camille earlier today. And they had a report on the local news radio about what, do you know Trump was traveling internationally this week? Probably not, because it wasn't really talked about. But he was just out opening new Trump golf courses. That's what he's been doing the last 3 or 4 days. It's amazing. It's like, and he's like, yeah, you know, the best golf course ever. And
best golf course in the world.
In the world, in world history. And like, that's kind of corrosive. We didn't used to have presidents who were making business transactions branded on their last name while they were in office. It's fucking weird, man. And I think we've had a lot of those norms go away, and it is genuinely distressing. But I don't think that it's, you know, the solution to it isn't nostalgia for a time that can't be again.
No. But it could be aspiration towards a time that does not yet exist, in which people are not quite swimming in there's quite as much shit.
Although there's a sense in which one can very quickly begin to get like nostalgic for a time when everything was better, when actually about 5 years ago it was just the left that was serially deranged and believed all kinds of crazy things, and even now in opposition, it's Jasmine Crockett who gets the glowing 30-odd minute read in The Atlantic that is just this massive profile of a person who is just clearly totally self-absorbed, not particularly bright, or at least is actually playing a person who is dumber than she actually is in order to get like political, to gain some sort of political traction. That's odd. And that suggests to me something that's even more distressing than just like Tucker Carlson is a bit nuts and he's very influential. Tucker Carlson is a bit nuts and he's very influential, and the greatest city on earth, New York City, you may have like a democratic socialist gets elected who wants to turn all the bodegas into state-run grocery store chains. Like, I don't know. Like, everyone seems a little bit batshit, and I am waiting for the silent majority to rise up and say enough of this bullshit.
They're pretty
people
fucking
just
silent.
Go back in the basement.
They're pretty fucking silent. I mean, yes, of course, this is not a uniquely right-wing phenomenon, but that's what makes it even more worrying when you see. There's always this kind of pendulum swing, isn't there, in politics? And the society's become a bit more left-wing, they've become a bit more right-wing. You hope that there's a kind of a medium that is, reasonable. But at the moment, the swings are just getting wild to such a degree that, like, what do you think, what is your sense? Is it going to just sort of shrink back to some sort of normalcy? Or because if it keeps spinning out wider and wider and wider and it becomes like Don Jr. or Tucker versus AOC or, you know, whatever, that's a recipe for serious division.
Yeah, I don't know.
We will have some.
I don't know what's going
to
happen.
We will have some crisis. That crises tend to focus the attention. There will be some crisis. In a good way or a bad way? In a bad way. No, we will have a bad crisis.
I think the word pretty much implies bad. I had a great crisis the other day.
So this is a prognostications of doom from you.
No, it's just like, look at the fucking calendar. Like, cyclically bad things happen. They happen in every presidency. They happen in every stretch.
We did have a pandemic
It was bad.
That's right.
It was bad.
But just bringing it,
it managed to live through the pandemic.
Didn't make us any less extreme.
No, it made us crazier. And the thing with the pandemic, like the financial crisis, like 9/11, is that, and it cannot be overstated, that the role of the elites, the people who are defending the norms, they all really fucked up. All of that. Really, really bad. I mean, like 3 years ago, three and a half years ago, the president of the United States was going around and saying this is only a pandemic of the unvaccinated, and that what we really need to do is kick Joe Rogan off Spotify and like censor Rand Paul so he doesn't tell people that maybe cloth masks don't work, and all this kind of stuff that is nuts, and like firing members of the military because they didn't take a vaccine that maybe they didn't really need to take. All of this happened pretty recently, and it was the elite structures in like scientific journals, in the NIH, in the CDC, they were enforcing this very non-scientific kind of groupthink set of ideas that was incredibly illiberal, and it led to a self-debasement of the people who we should be normally looking to solve problems. So there's a reason why people, I mean, I remember with Tablet Magazine, the long fawning profile of RFK when he started running. It's kind of bizarre, 5 trillion words, and saying basically, since the elites have messed everything up, then maybe every conspiracy theory is true. I'm kind of boiling it down, but that was kind of it. And that's not a great conclusion. But like the opening bit is like the elites did screw up a lot of stuff, and we shouldn't sleep on it.
Yeah. So in terms of like you mentioned platforming on like this idea that we shouldn't talk to people who have bad ideas because that will give them exposure. I think everyone here probably disagrees with that notion, but it's about how you do it, right? I mean, it's about modeling a constructive way and pushing back on bullshit. Do you worry at all about platforming? Like, is there a limit to it?
I think that the people who, it goes back to what we said before, there are people who are platforming, like, you know, Daryl Cooper or Candace Owens, and Daryl Cooper's not crazy, who are really platforming him because they want to spread his word.
Just explain who Daryl Cooper is.
Daryl Cooper is the, he goes by Martyrmaid on Twitter. He's a serious World War II revisionist who has said things that sounded like the Holocaust was an accident because they didn't have enough food to feed people, that Churchill was installed by the Jews in order to pursue World War II by Zionist financiers, things like that. So platforming just means putting somebody on the air. Donahue used to put on KKK members. I mean, all sorts of outlandish and outrageous people were platformed in the 70s to be taken on and confronted.
Yeah.
That I'm all for. Now that it's just the idea of presenting people in order to aid them as they spread their word, that worries me. It's dangerous, especially as we've all retreated to bubbles. And what we used to have, even though we thought we had totally free speech, we talked about this before, we had gatekeepers. And though we may not want gatekeepers, we benefited probably as a whole from those gatekeepers who kept us kind of within a certain range of what we were going to engage with as a polity.
I would put it that
there's
we
no range anymore.
I would put it that we benefited less from their gatekeeping function and more by their sort of leadership or actions by example of producing actual good bits of work. And so you would naturally kind of gravitate to that. Oh, you know, if the Washington Post is covering, let's say they decided to cover the Portland protests in 2020, I could, you know, back in the old day, you could trust the Washington Post was going to do a good job. You couldn't in 2020. You could trust that Nancy Rommel was going to do a good job in 2020. But like seriously, the reason why she went there is that we were sitting with Jacob Siegel in my front yard. And like, who can we trust about reporting in Portland right now? And the answer was nobody. And so we said, get on the plane. And that's a bad state of affairs for the media. And that's not the gatekeeping function. It's not like who gets to talk and who doesn't. It's like who gets to do good work. And now because of the institutional collapse and some self-sabotage, I think, on the part of the sort of professional mores of some people in journalism, that's kind of gone.
Yeah.
So I think that's the function of it.
And I mean, in terms of who you talk to, like that, you know, there's a weird kind of uncanny valley between where people will give you shit for talking to someone who's a bit bad, but they would know that if you spoke to Osama bin Laden, it would be fine because there's
right.
a journalistic reason.
He's a newsmaker.
Like, you know, I mean, yeah. I will get much less shit if I do a podcast episode with someone who's been to jail for murder than with someone who said something that's a little bit off script in a strange way. And as a result, a lot of people and a lot of journalists and a lot of podcasters don't talk to people who are a little bit off script for them, and that is what leads to what you're talking about with the Washington Post, where people can't trust it because it's being reported from inside a bubble, because those reporters don't talk to anybody who doesn't think like them.
You see that starting to change now, the New York Times. Anytime the Democrats lose a presidential election, there's like this great six-month season of like, I wonder what a Republican thinks.
Yeah.
By the way, there's another problem, isn't there, that news stories are now basically sold a la carte. It's not like you'd buy the New York Times and then your front page, and then you have and you make your way through the entire
the bundled stuff.
Every story basically lives or dies based on its enticement to get you to click on it on an individual basis, and that's a perverse incentive to gin up the story. To very often, actually, you read headlines that the story doesn't even come through on. Right, the story is a disappointment, but the headline entices you, and this is just another thing to add to that list of things that are making our information worse.
The shot's coming down.
I'm already buzzing from a few sips here. I've lost my train of thought.
I get two?
No, I don't want two.
All right,
pass it down to Welsh. He's going to get drunk.
It's for Jesse when he gets his bitch ass up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, actually, yeah. All right, shall we? Let's play a little game of Fuck, Marry, Kill, and I'll give you some names, and I want to hear you flesh out, you three, who you would make love to, who you would spend the rest of your life with, and who you would murder. Okay? So, first up, Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, Tucker Carlson.
Well, I mean, let's just get an easy one out of the way first. I mean, me and J.D. Vance are going to make sweet, sweet love. It's just because J.D. Vance, he's soft. And he has soft hands.
He's a gentleman from Appalachia.
But I won't be gentle. Yeah. I won't be gentle, JD.
There you go.
Again, you're forcing me to do this. I don't want to do this.
No. You can
I hadn't thought about
protest as much as you want, Kamel.
I'm going to marry Donald Trump. And it's just so I can redeem him, so I can help him.
Right.
Because I feel like a lot of people would want to kill him, and I'm not going to do it.
I'll
lead with love. And Tucker, I'll kill him because you're forcing me to murder someone, but maybe I'm helping.
Okay.
Because
you
can't be haunted by the demons.
Anyone have a different opinion about those three?
Yeah, I would kill J.D. Vance. I hate him more than any politician ever. I really detest this guy.
I don't know why that hurts me.
I guess I would have to fuck Tucker Carlson because he hates gays so much. And
is that true?
And I think Trump, I would marry Trump because I actually think Trump would be interesting and good company over the long
term.
You know?
See?
That's true. He'd be entertaining.
Melania is sticking with him. Melania has stuck with him. He gave her Barron.
They sleep in separate bedrooms.
Stop.
Ergo.
Well, maybe. Matt, do you dissent with any of that?
No, I'm just a little describing some other opportunities with Rome, so.
Okay, your question, first one to you then, Matt. AOC.
Oh, man, why don't
we all
I
know
get
what we
one?
Do with AOC, don't we?
Why?
You got to make it harder than that. Check, please.
Bernie Sanders and Zoran Mamdani.
Zoran is going to get it. Let's go. Let's go.
No, I mean, you fuck AOC for obvious reasons. Obvious to me, I won't speak for everybody. I think that you marry Bernie Sanders for...
That's a good choice, yeah.
Not for the breath. Or anything like that.
Well, he won't live that long. That's
exactly. Right. It is, as I suspect Camille's was, it's an inheritance play. This is what you're just buying your time and you get to inherit three houses. It's going to be awesome. And then, we just, I guess, if we're going to, I'm a peace-loving hippie at heart, but if we're going to murder somebody, the guy who's going to run New York and do it.
Okay. Any difference of opinion there, Camille?
I mean... No, I'm wrong with that.
I have a Puerto Rican wife, so AOC reminds me of her.
You're too easy. All right, Camille, next, the next trio is Joe Rogan, Lex Friedman, and Theo Vaughn.
Oh, man. This is hard. Because who's going to get it? I always start there. Because that's just where my mind is. That's where my mind is. Huh. Man, this is hard.
I mean, Joe Rogan is a great guy, so you want to marry Joe.
No, no, we're not getting married.
No?
No, we're going
to marry. I mean, I don't mean great for society. I mean, he's lovely. Wow. He's a cuddly teddy bear. You just want to spoon
I'll
him.
I'll take great for society. It's fine. I think it's great that he has people listening to, truck drivers listening to physicists for 3 hours.
And I think, I don't really know what Theo Vaughn looks like, but I think he's hot, right? Or hotter. He's hot-ish or not?
He's got a bit like of a schlong.
Does he?
Yeah, yeah. Is okay, that true? So how do you know that?
No, a mullet. A mullet. Oh, short in the front. Party in the front.
You guys heard what I heard, right?
I heard schlong.
Schlong. Short in the front, long in the back.
No, that's not a
thing. That's not what a schlong is.
You can't coin that.
Poor Matthew Welch has lived his entire life not knowing what a schlong is. They told him in the playground what it was.
The English language is rich, my friend. You would know this if you came from a country
not that rich.
I think you'd have to kill. You'd have to kill Lex Friedman.
Yeah. You go.
And you'd marry Joe, and you'd.
No, I'll switch Theo. Joe and Theo in that particular sequence. But yeah.
Oh, okay. Theo's very fun. Good.
Wait, you'd fuck Joe Rogan?
Dude's mixed.
I think he'd be
arts.
Fucked by Joe Rogan.
Yeah, exactly.
we know who's the bottom
on
that one.
I'm nobody's bottom. I am Scots Jamaican. We have standards here.
Camille, there's on the Fifth Column podcast, which you all should subscribe to if I learned how to talk after drinking so much fucking whiskey back there, apparently. Camille had like a month-long run in which he's like, no, I think I could take Joe Rogan at MMA.
I don't know how to do MMA. I actually don't know how to fight.
No, I didn't say in MMA. That's not what I said. Listen, every man, if you're a man, there are men in this room. When you go and you meet a guy for the first time, it doesn't matter what the context is. Part of your mind is like, how do I fuck him up? Like, what do I do? If we fight, like, what am I going to do? I'm going to grab something over here. I'm going to club him in the face. Like, this fork is going right in his eye. I like Josh. I thought about that when I saw Josh today. Because it's just been a while. Like, what am I going to do? And with Joe Rogan, yeah, I can imagine scenarios where I take him out. And it's not like in the octagon where there are rules. It's just like, go for the testicles, use that particular implement.
You think he would be impeded by his reverence for rules?
Yes.
And you would be...
Yes, his training.
You
his
would
years
be
of training. He's like, okay. How do I Krav Maga? And I'm like, fuck that.
So, Noam, three more names. Vladimir Putin, the Ayatollah Khamenei, and Kim Jong-un.
Another easy one.
I guess you got to kill the Ayatollah.
Maybe. It's not time for Jew in the hot seat yet, Jesse. Shut up.
Am I backing into marrying Kim Jong-un? I think that's what's...
You can back into the other thing.
What's going on here? And then you got to... Fuck Vladimir Putin.
You can't even say it.
Fuck Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I think that's right. Russian horrors seem to be the best ones. So.
I think that's right.
Wait, is Matt. That a compliment or a diss? That's a compliment.
So I hear.
That's a note of appreciation from what I understand.
I'll give you three new names. I'll give you three new, unless you really want to answer that one.
No, fucking kill the commies first.
Yeah!
It's just fucking straight. What are we even fucking doing? Did we not watch Red Dawn at age 16
right.
and agree to volunteer?
So you're marrying the Ayatollah Khamenei.
Sure, that sounds like a hot night.
I want to break new ground in Iranian society.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
Okay, here's another one for you, Matt. Eric Weinstein.
Oh.
Brett is Weinstein, they keep telling me. They always say. It's like Einstein. Brett Weinstein, Eric Weinstein, Pee Wee Herman.
What was the last one?
Pee-wee Herman.
I just will love Pee-wee for eternity. That's the only, you know, I will marry him. If he wants to make sweet love, we'll do that too.
Okay, so which Weinstein is getting a bullet?
That's easy.
No, you got to kill Eric so that Brett comes up with a theory about it.
be the other way around.
Oh my gosh.
Eric has the theory of everything.
Okay, last one for this is going to be audience participation, and we're going to do the three gentlemen around me. Okay, we're going to do by round of applause. The first one that I will do not right now is going to be. Oh yeah, how will I do this? I should have probably thought this through beforehand, shouldn't I? By yelling out loudly, you're going to tell me which out of these, either Matt, Noam, or Camille, do you... the first one is the F word, okay? So
everyone, F word. Suddenly children.
I say fuck on my podcast all the time, but the fact
just
that...
couldn't get there.
But it's something about the geography
because
of this place.
Me, it was because
like,
it was me.
No,
that's
it's
what
these
it
tables and the chairs. I feel like I'm testifying before Congress or something. It's like, you're not allowed to say fuck. So everyone who wants to fuck Camille, clap now.
I mean, please don't hurt my friend. I'm great.
Oh, isn't that nice? Yeah, yeah.
Everyone who wants to fuck Noam, clap now. Everyone who wants to fuck Matt, clap now.
But it's exactly the same.
It's not. It's exactly a little stronger. Camille won. It's a little stronger. I think some of them are just shy, which is fine. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for your endorsement.
Who do you want to marry? Do you want to marry Matt?
Yes.
Do you want to marry Noam?
That's
the
same as own club.
No, we shouldn't get married.
I think we're married. I think so far we're fucking you and we're marrying you, which means you get a bullet, man.
Bye, Felicia.
All right, let's welcome up the wonderful Jesse Single to play. Jew in the hot seat, everybody. Jew in the hot seat.
Can we talk about the elephant in the room for a minute?
Oh, no.
So we were backstage beforehand. Camille asked, he said, I'm a little tired. Does anyone have anything to help me out? Matt Welch opened up a child's backpack full of cocaine. Camille gets into storytelling mode, and he's lived a rich life. He said, after college, he just said this of his own free will. He says, this is a direct quote, I spent a few years as the bouncer on Epstein's Island. And I asked him, what does that mean? Was this sort of in the supportive role? He's like, no, I was knee deep in that shit. Again, a direct quote. It was his job to check the ID to make sure no one over 17 got on the island.
G'day, humans. Well, if you've listened to this much of the episode, then you must enjoy it, presumably, unless you're just listening for masochistic reasons. So you should listen to the rest of it. And the way you do that is by subscribing to the premium feed, where you not only get to hear the rest of this delightful conversation, and trust me, oh, it gets better than what you just heard, but you also get to hear no ads, zero ads. And previously, up until now, you had to go to the old Substack to do that and follow me on Substack and add one more platform to your life if you're not already on Substack. But here's the thing. We are now on Apple Premium Podcast as well. So with one click, Apple will just subscribe you up to the premium feed. You'll be able to listen to the rest of this conversation right now, right now, right now. So open up your Apple Podcasts, click the old Pay Old Zepsy button. That's probably what it's called, Pay Old Zepsy. And you click the button and then you no longer have to be a free rider. You can feel like you're contributing to the mission of this show, which is really what we're all here for. Better conversations, a freer, more freewheeling attitude towards the things that we can talk about, a way to steelman our opponents and to take the most gracious approach towards disagreement. That is what you're voting for when you vote for Uncomfortable Conversations by going into your Apple Podcasts and clicking subscribe. I love you. If you don't do that, that's fine. I'll see you the next free episode, I guess. Take care.